You're listening to Vatican Radio. Pope John XXIII's Cold War era encyclical Pacem in Terris, or Peace on Earth, remains extremely contemporary and can act as a guide to peace building in today's world. That's what Pope Francis told participants at a three-day Vatican conference this week, celebrating the 50th anniversary of the 1963 encyclical letter. Experts from Catholic universities and institutions, and from the UN, the Council of Europe, the African Union, and the Organization of American States, gathered in Rome at the request of the Pontifical Justice and Peace Council to discuss the relevance of Pacem in Terris to their peace-building efforts in today's world. Among them were the leaders of the global Catholic peace network Pax Christi International. I caught up with co-president Marie Dennis, the first woman and first layperson to hold that leadership position. She explained why Pacem in Terris has served as a kind of Magna Carta for the work of the organisation.
In many ways, of course, the timing. Pax Christi was a new organization founded after the Second World War. And so by the time Pacem in Terris was written, Pax Christi was listening very carefully to the message of the Holy Father. And so much of what was included in Pacem in Terris reflected the commitment of Pax Christi at that time and still now to reconciliation, to peace, to a fullness of peace. And many of the concerns that are described in the documents were our concerns. And also much of the vision that the document holds out in all of its optimism is the vision that we have been promoting for almost 70 years now. So,
of course, the circumstances have changed enormously. That was back in the days of the Cold War. How relevant really is the document today to the work that you're doing?
That's a very interesting question because, of course, the context is almost completely different. But as we have gone through the document over the last few years of reflecting on it, what we believe is that the heart of the document is still very, very relevant, that some of the optimism, some of the expectation that we would move to a world beyond the colonialism and so on that was so prevalent when the document was, or just breaking up when the document was written, we've moved to other problems. So some of the specifics may not match exactly, but in every other way, from the recognition that peace was much more than the absence of war, that it included attention to poverty, to human rights, to solidarity, the heart of the document is still very relevant, including right up to and including these times as we look at the challenge, for example, before the United Nations to be relevant, to be a place where the nations of the world come together to deal with the global issues that are affecting our lives. Interestingly, Pacem in Terris pointed in that direction very clearly, and we're still trying to figure out how to do that. And the vision is very, very important.
You're talking about optimism in the document, and yet wouldn't you agree there are so many disappointments? Here we are, half a century on, still looking about how to avoid war.
Absolutely. I thought it was very interesting in looking at the document how optimistic it was, because it was in the middle of the Cold War, and Pope John XXIII hadn't seen the great nonviolent movements that really brought down the Berlin Wall, that shifted the global reality so dramatically. Yet it was very optimistic. At the same time, many of the same problems remain, that we are still struggling with war. We have not reached a good balance between sovereignty and the respect for sovereignty and unwavering commitment to human rights and to peace. So there's a great deal of relevance and much work to be done.
What impact, I'm wondering, has this document had on you and your commitment to justice and peace? If I'm not mistaken, you started your career as a physicist designing nuclear submarines. Is that right?
I did, yes. That was a brief career. But, well, Pacem in Terris was, in many ways, one of the very earliest challenges that I personally encountered as a young girl and a young woman growing up. I went through Catholic schools. I went to a Catholic college. I was very attentive to the voice of the Catholic Church. But with Pacem in Terris and Mater et Magistra, and then with the Council, my whole understanding of faith expanded so tremendously to include not only my own personal journey in relationship with God, with Jesus, but most especially the obligation that we have as followers of Jesus to engage in the affairs of the world, to promote the inbreaking and the flowering of the new creation. So Pachamantaris had a tremendous impact on my life, and to have had the voice of the church so clearly calling for deep peace, and what I would say now is sustainable peace, that there are connections between our relationship to other people, that whole sense of right relationships, and we are more and more understanding our relationship to the rest of creation. And I think Pachamantaris really started that journey for me in many ways.
You've also asked for the church to, if not end, at least review its so-called just war theory, haven't you?
In many ways, the church has been moving over the last 50 years from looking at nonviolence war pacifism as a legitimate position for individuals, but not a direction in which public policy could go. I think that the church has moved. I think that we have, as people trying to be faithful, come to realize more and more that, on the one hand, Jesus' witness was a witness of nonviolence all the way to the cross. And on the other hand, we live in a world where the possibility of a war that is so-called a just war is almost non-existent. So what we are calling for, certainly, is at the very least that we rename the criteria that we are using to judge the next steps in terms of our response to potential violent conflict. And so that just holding on to that idea of a just war theory implies that actually a just war is quite easy, and it just has to go through these steps and this war is just. But, of course, that's not the reality at all. And so a set of ethical criteria that were designed to make violence in conflict rare, very rarely justifiable, have been used much too often to give us an easy entree to war and violent conflict. So we think that it is time to move beyond that language. Obviously, the criteria that would evaluate any direction in terms of international response or internal response to violence, to potential conflict, to oppression, repression, and so on. Those criteria need to be applied to whatever is our response. And we believe that our response is that our obligation is to identify clearly a much more diverse toolbox of nonviolent tools that can be used in response to threats. The threats are real. We do have to respond to them. But to think that we can respond to them with war, we think is just not viable anymore. And so how to move to new language, to new images in the context of international relations, so often a nonviolent response is dismissed as naive and just can't be done. And that's just not true. More conflicts that were either already violent or potentially violent were resolved in the 20th century using nonviolence than were using resort to war. And I think even the most recent example with Syria.
I was going to say, what impact, how important is the voice of the Pope and this particular initiative there for Syria?
I think it is tremendously important. The clear insistence that military action was not an appropriate response and that there were other ways to respond, the powerful witness of Pope Francis and all of the many people, Catholics and people of many other faith traditions who prayed with him for peace, I think had a tremendous and very real political impact. Our message as Pax Christi in the very intense debate in Washington was that if we believe in a world where the nations of the world must come together to resolve our greatest challenges, then this is a perfect time when we have to do that, that the United States cannot act alone, but that the nations of the world must find other ways to do it. And I think the evidence is really quite wonderful to see the progression so far of steps in diplomacy that have begun to bear fruit. And so I think it's been a great example. And clearly, the moral force and the credibility of Pope Francis in his calling for prayer for peace was very, very important. I think it had a big impact on politicians in the United States.
You've spent a lot of your time with politicians, haven't you? That's what you do in the World Bank and the IMF and the White House. Do you see a changing response to the voice of the church? Do you see a greater willingness to listen to the moral, ethical arguments rather than just the real politic?
I do. I think that in the world of politics, that there are always competing voices. I do believe that the voice from a moral perspective, from the church, from faith leaders, especially a leader like Pope Francis, who by his own personal witness has so beautifully claimed credibility, international credibility, I believe that that voice is heard and does have an impact in places where important political decisions are made. But there has to be consonance between our words and the way we act, both as individuals and as communities and as a church. And so the more coherent we are, the more faithful we are to what we believe, I think the more clear is the message that we bring into political places. So, and I think they're heard. It was quite interesting in this very intense, short debate in Washington over the potential military action in Syria. The impact both on the administration, the Obama administration, the White House, the State Department, and the impact on the U.S. Congress of faith, people of faith, including the Catholic community, calling for another way was beautiful. It was really very helpful. So yes, I think it does have an impact.
If words must be backed up by actions, by the way the church behaves, presumably you're very encouraged by the idea of reforms we're hearing about now with the meeting of cardinals towards a church that is more out there serving the people.
Absolutely. The message of the Holy Father in the last 6 months has been such a beautiful message of what I understand is the message of the gospel, which is a message of service, of solidarity, of accompaniment, of welcome, of inclusion. And so the more that we as church can echo that witness in the way we are present in the world, the more effect we'll have in a positive way, I think, in helping to nurture peace and encourage genuine responses to poverty. We've been through a time in the world in the last how many decades of, I think, really tragic, overwhelming selfishness. That this is certainly true in the United States, where we have such a strong individualistic inclination. I will get mine. I will provide for my security. I will care about my own small circle of friends. The message that Pope Francis is making so clear is that that can't be the answer, that we have to live in a world where we are all sisters and brothers, where community is a community that reaches to all of the margins of our world. And I think it's a very beautiful moment, and I think speaks very loudly. I'm certain in every corner of the world, it's certainly true in Washington and the United States, that many people who have not listened to the Catholic Church in a long, long time are listening very carefully, are inspired in very significant ways by the direction in which Pope Francis is encouraging us to move.
One final question. Since the beginning of your work, you've been very concerned about the role of women, haven't you? In fact, you are the first woman, I believe, to be a president there of Pax Christi. How do you feel about the future? We've heard talk about developing a feminine theology. Where do you see the church moving in that sense?
Yes, it's a great challenge. I do believe that what has been most significantly a sign of hope for me has been the inclination and the commitment of Pope Francis to relationships. It's evident that he has friends, that he has friendships, that he treasures respectful relationships. And I believe, I hope, that we are moving as an institutional church, as a community, to a place where women's voices and experience will be heard with respect, where relationships within the church with women will be honored and treasured. Yes, I have understood the impetus and the positive impetus to talk about a theology of women, but actually we have spectacular women theologians who have been developing a very articulate, deep, challenging theology from the perspective of women's experience. And I am hopeful that that richness that is evident around the world among women will be welcomed in a way that it can also nourish the church. I hope that will happen. I think that as more women are included in the circles of conversation and decision-making, that becomes more possible. So I'm hopeful, but it's a great challenge.
My thanks there to Marie Dennis, co-president of Pax Christi International.